Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
An Erios original.
Kristen and I went to the Nürburgring, which is...
No speed limit.
Yes, it's a 17-mile-long racetrack in Germany that at one time and still sometimes is a public road. So on Sundays, it is open to the public to just go race. Any knucklehead can buy a pass.
Dax to be on my show, on this show. I mean, I feel kind of conceited saying my show.
Well, it's not my show.
Because I'm coming back now from Kerry, who is substituting for me because I was away working on the TV show called Betty that's going to be out spring or summer on HBO.
Oh my God.
And it's going to be so awesome. And I'm promoting it. I don't care.
I'm so happy for you.
Dude,
and this sets us up perfectly for when we met.
Skateboarding.
Yeah. No one else should be telling the story but you.
I mean, I'm not good at skateboarding.
Right.
But I do appreciate the art form.
Or the subculture surrounding it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of a poser.
Well.
That's okay. But anyway.
We're roughly the same age. I'm older than you. You're 40?
Yeah.
I'm 44.
You are?
Yeah.
I thought we were in the same grade.
I wish.
Me too. God, this like changes everything.
But you and I have a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
I talk about you an inordinate amount versus how much I get to see you, which is I'll take full responsibility for. But I find myself talking about you as if we're still day-to-day relevant in one another's life, which I think is a testament to just A, how much I relate to you, and B, how much I like you. But you come up on the podcast, I'd say once every 12 episodes or something.
I know.
I'm aware.
People tell me all the time, they're like, oh, Dax mentioned you again. I'm like, motherfucker. But it's not just because you like me, it's because you love me.
I love you. I do.
I love you. And even though we don't see or talk on the day to day, I wouldn't feel conflicted about if I was in a crunch, you being one of my emergency contacts.
Of course. And I would be there in a second.
I know. But my car got towed and Dax took me to get it out and loaned me $300 to pay for it because I had no money. And the fun thing about driving with Dax is that not only is he a really good driver because he loves cars and that's his hobby and that's what we want to talk about, among other things, but also he drives really fast and I feel completely safe.
I remember you commenting on it on the way downtown to get your car.
That
and
I felt safe
you
were
my dream passenger. Well, you said you felt safe.
Yeah, yeah. I did feel safe. It was a bit thrilling for me.
Well, you're from New York.
I'm from New York, but I'm also, you know, I don't know that many daredevils.
Okay. Let's call it daredevils.
Actually,
you know
a
lot
of daredevil.
You know a lot of daredevils, but not in the vehicular space.
No, definitely not in the vehicular space. And also, Dax has like this weird off-roading. Do you still have it? Sort of like a crop duster, like
yeah,
it's just some sort of golf cart that is not that at all.
Oh, did you see us driving down the road one time? Was that you that saw us on Los Feliz Boulevard driving on the grass?
You once drove me on the grass.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. But someone saw Belle and I just kind of out driving on the grass of Los Feliz Boulevard.
Probably. And
it was one of the times I was reminded, like, oh, right, when you're not at a premiere, people still can recognize you. And, you know, people will notice if you're off-roading illegally in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a car that doesn't have a top or doors or windows. It's like, yeah, dude, you're getting noticed in that.
But can I start at the beginning of our love affair? Because yeah, I think it's my favorite story.
I know, but here's the thing about you tell this story.
Probably wrong.
You do tell it wrong.
Okay, it started occurring to me because I just told it again recently. I told it in the makeup trailer like Wednesday. And I imagine I've added what I recognize is I was like, I bet I've elevated my role in her life.
No, that isn't what you get wrong.
What do I get wrong?
There's just a bit of a risque detail that
That we leave out,
that you leave out, that yeah, so I leave out not, as respect, because
well, and that's not getting it wrong, that's just I haven't told all of it.
Okay I just wanted to
I did say when I was talking the makeup trailer, I'd say I think the reason we stayed friends and close is that we magically didn't fuck, which is shocking for where we were both at in our lives,
right?
It's very shocking.
Totally.
And I'll give you the credit.
Thank
as you deserve.
Thanks, because he tried.
Well, I sent you a dick pic.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just glad that you remembered that.
Oh, yeah.
Because
But hold on, also, I didn't just like cold dick pic you.
No, of course not.
We were talking
not.
About penises. And
We were texting a lot, and how we met was really fun, and I never felt like it was, I never felt like it was creepy or pervy.
By the way, I didn't even feel that pervy about doing it.
Yeah.
I felt more like, we're on the topic, here's what mine looks like, more than come upstairs.
It was.
I can say that with full...
I know that that's the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that if I were like game and I was like, and I thought about it because I know you would be game.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was kind of scared, you know?
Oh,
I think
let's
I was
start
also
the
dating somebody. I was working at the Maritime Hotel, and I was working in reservations the night shift. So I started my shift at like 5, and I would just sit in the basement by myself answering phones from guests and taking room service orders, and it was a really mellow...
That's the key component of the story to
job.
Me.
Yeah.
Which is I ordered coffee every morning. And I thought it was ridiculous that they didn't have a room service person, that the operator had to take my coffee order.
And this was at night. And I think you had ordered tea.
Okay.
Because if it was in the morning, the office would have been full and you wouldn't have been allowed
to go ahead.
I wouldn't have brought you down.
Right. Okay.
So I was there by myself. And so when we had somebody staying in the hotel that was in the penthouse, a VIP person, they would have a little asterisk next to their name so we would know to
so
like be extra.
Whether or not I had one.
You did.
Oh, I did.
So, yeah, because we would know whether or not to be extra nice to them.
This is
so
terrible.
It said Mr. Shepherd penthouse with an asterisk. And so I didn't, because it's not only celebrities. Sometimes it's just like finance people.
Dignitaries.
Right.
Yeah, sure. All the many, many ambassadors that stay at the Maritime.
Exactly.
But let's just, this is many, many years ago. I was doing Baby Mama. It was the first time I had been single in 9 years.
Yeah.
And I was just in New York, being single, working on a movie I was excited to be in. And then mostly I was off. I didn't work up much. And so I was ordering tea. We'll say it was tea.
It wasn't anything. It was early evening.
Okay.
So maybe it was coffee, but it wasn't anything. It wasn't a crazy order. I remember that.
Right. But I said, hey, I just want to say, I think it's horseshit you have to take my order and that you have to then get that to the people. And you said, well, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, did I?
This is my memory.
Because
you go, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Do you know where I'm talking to you from? And I go, no. And you go, I'm in a cinder block box in the basement.
Oh my God. But I also at one point had gotten another call and I said to Dad, I said, do you mind just holding on 1 second? I have to get this. And he was like, no problem. And I got the other call. And I went back and he was still there.
Sure.
And I was like, so anyway, my job, by the way, was so great. It was like, who was I to complain?
Well, that's what we do.
But yeah, at a certain point.
We chit-chatted for, in my memory, 15, 20 minutes. And then, so we have different memories of it.
Yeah, we talked for a while.
Yes. And I remember, now that you say it, I think you might be right that you invited me to look. But what I remember is you saying, we'd been talking forever. And you were like, hey, this is fun, but I have a cigarette break and I want to take it. And I go, okay, great. I'll meet you downstairs. Where do you smoke? And you go out in front of the place. So I went down there.
But wait. At that point, it was safe because I didn't recognize the last name Shepherd. Like, that could be many different people.
Sam Shepherd.
But he was like, what do you do? Like, when you're not, I was like, it's pretty slow tonight, whatever. I was like, well, actually, right now I'm reading an issue of Us Weekly. And he was like, oh, is it the one where my movie is reviewed without a paddle? And I was like, I don't know. What's your movie? And you told me, and I was like, oh,
this
incidentally,
is an embarrassing part of the story.
No, but I was like, incidentally, it is the one where they reviewed my book. And you were like, what page is your book on? So we told each other what pages our reviews were on. And I was like, when you're done reading it, you can call back. Which you did. And I was like, that's who you are. I heard that movie's so funny. Blah, blah, blah. And then he read the little thing about Dear Diary. And you were like, this is so awesome. Because it said something about like substance abuse or something.
So we discovered we were both sober.
But we didn't discover that until we were both in the basement. So
I thought it was during the cigarette, but great.
It wasn't
on the phone. It was in person.
Right. So I was like, I'm going to go smoke. He came down and met me. We just hugged each other.
Yeah.
Like total strangers, but it wasn't weird or creepy. It was a very nice conversation.
This is still, because this is before the dick pic by quite a while.
Yeah.
This is just, oh, this person's really fun to talk to. I'm doing nothing.
Yeah, did you still smoke then?
I didn't. I had quit probably like 6 months before.
You were on the gum.
The lozenges, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we connected downstairs. I found out you know, I wanted to read your book. Mm-hmm. I then saw the basement. It was as dreary as you painted it.
He came down to work with me. We ended up talking for a while. He was staying at the hotel for a while. A
couple months, probably.
I gave you a copy of the book.
Mm-hmm. I read it very quickly.
He gave it to Amy Poehler.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I met Amy. And then we discovered that we were both sober individuals. And that was like, when you find that out halfway into meeting somebody for the first time, it's really, really exciting.
Oh, it is.
It's such a thrill. And so now we really had a reason to also keep in touch that was...
Well, that's also why I really do believe I never was like, ooh, I'm going to fuck this girl.
Yeah.
As soon as you were sober and I was sober, we were like, oh, we're brothers and sisters on this path.
Yeah.
And then consequently, we're both perverts. So, of course, when we were texting, it became sexual. And then somehow I did send you a dick pic. And then we never did do anything. Thank God.
No.
And then that just kind of passed. There was never another one.
And this was during a different time when that wasn't. But it was funny. And I didn't ever show anybody, and I definitely don't have it anywhere.
That was probably 11 phones ago.
Also, like, it had to have been a flip phone.
I was gonna say, I definitely sent it to you from my sidekick, I think. So we're not even positive you could make out the full shape of the penis. I mean, you're talking about a 1 megapixel, you know.
Dax is a tall man. Not sure if anybody listening to this has ever seen him. He's a big man. But it was just that weird room service. And we've been friends ever since.
Okay,
and
that was
before Baby Mama came out. How many years ago did Baby Mama come out? Like, this was a long time ago. He lives around the block from me now.
But I read your book. I was like, she's not just a fun conversationalist. She's an incredible writer. I was super, super into your book. And as you said, I gave it to Poehler. Poehler read it really quick. She wrote you a little letter. I gave it to you. You were very excited.
Yeah.
And then, now this is the part where I was like, oh, when I tell this story, am I inflating my role? So I do remember you going like, I think I'm going to come to LA and I'm going to get an agent and a manager and I need a car And I remember
had an
being
agent and a manager already. But
oh, you already had all that.
I don't have an agent now.
Oh, you're agentless. Oh, because you've fired yours during that. Yeah. Yeah, I found myself in a weird position during that because, well, A, I've quit writing, and B,
why? What do you mean you've quit?
Fucking hate it. Because I was like, I'm going to give myself, after Chips, and I was sad. I'm like, I'm gonna put everything I'm obligated to write on hold and just see what life's like without homework all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I have the greatest job. I go say lines on a fucking dot on the ground and I get paid the same as I do to write, which is miserable and I hate it. Yeah. What am I doing? Now, that's not to say I'm not going to write ever again, well, but currently I'm
when
retired.
You get assignments, it's homework.
It's fucking homework. Even if it's something you love that you pitch, that you have a draft due on, you're on vacation and you look at your spouse and they're on vacation, but I'm like, fuck, I got to figure out the third act to that thing. I never...
Was
I
Hit and Run homework?
No, that weirdly I wrote so quickly, the quickest thing I've ever written. I bet in 15 days I wrote that.
That's unbelievable to me. Like, I've never written, I can't recall anything I've written in 15 days that I made into a movie because I've never written or made a movie. But I don't think I've ever written, I don't count. I have no concept of time and it's an illusion, so I don't know, but that seems like very fast. And it was your passion to write that, though.
Well, here's what happened. I had made this little movie, Brothers Justice, for $5,000, and Lionsgate was launching this whole kind of division that was going to be all micro-budget movies, like $2 million and under. So when they launched this, my friend Andrew Panay, who has produced a bunch of the stuff I was in, said, hey, I think we could get something made. What do you want to get made? And I said, oh, well, I've always wanted to do kind of a Sundance version of Smokey and the Bandit. And he goes, okay, let's go tell them. We go tell them, and they go, we'll make this. But I was approaching a hiatus from Parenthood, so I knew I had to turn in a draft for that thing in 2 weeks, or I would miss that window. So I turned in the draft of it. It didn't end up being made at Lionsgate. But then it was like, oh, we found money so we can still shoot it on this hiatus. So that's why I know it really was 2 weeks, because from the time we met with Lionsgate till I gave them a draft was like 2 weeks.
And it's so good.
Thank you.
It's so fun. And I know that you love cars.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that movie is like, I'm going to take my hobby.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make it a part of my work, which is kind of what this podcast is about. But like, when you made that, I know that you, because I know you love movies and TV and all that, and like, it is your job. But like, to me, it felt like you would have done it. I mean, anyway, like, it didn't seem like it was ever a struggle.
I would totally agree with that. Until, of course, editing it, then it becomes
right.
Your big shit soup. Yeah. Like, oh fuck. But I gotta call the investors and say I didn't get it.
Did you start loving cars when you were a little kid?
Yeah, from day one. I can't remember not being into cars. My dad sold cars. My mom ended up working at General Motors and starting a company that put on car shows for journalists.
Right, because you're from Michigan.
I'm from the Detroit area, and yeah, my father wooed my mom. Because he had a 68 Chevelle that she'll say that's totally the reason she went on a date with him, because he had that car. They used to drag race together.
Really?
My mom had a Powder Puff record at Milan Dragway.
How cute. Like,
so, yeah, my dad
Not
rode
cute.
Dirt
cool.
bikes and had tough and empowered.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Except for the Powder Puff part. And yeah, my mom rode a dirt bike when I was a kid, and my dad had like a four-wheel drive truck. We used to go to the sand dunes on vacation. So
you still do, right?
Yeah, now I do. But you know what? It also held this heightened thing, which is my mom and dad were married until my brother was 8. So my brother had motorcycles. He was old enough to really know what was going on, and I was 3 when they got divorced, and I didn't get any of that shit. Like, I never did get a motorcycle. I never. So I coveted that stuff like crazy. They're right. The Jordans. Like, I wanted a dirt bike and I wanted a cool car and I want, you know.
Because this was all something that your brother, it like represented your parents being together. It represented love.
It didn't, because I didn't care. I didn't want them to get back together because I was so little. I didn't like really remember he was around. I didn't want them to get back together, but I did want that shit my brother got.
Right.
Very bad.
Do you know how to ride a motorcycle?
Do I know how to?
I mean,
to?
I know you do.
Haven't you ridden with me? I feel like not I took you for a ride once and you had never been on a ride.
No, because my grandfather rode a motorcycle, so he used to take me on rides all the time.
Okay.
I've been on many a Yamaha.
Okay.
He didn't ride a Harley.
So Chips, so Hit and Run was me getting to do all the car stuff
Chips
I ever wanted to do.
Motorcycle.
And then Chips was my motorcycle movie. Oh,
doy. Yeah, you know how to ride a motorcycle. I don't know. I think there's something about, like you just said, you were on hiatus from Parenthood. And I'm like, oh yeah, Dax was on that show, which I watched every season of and I love it. But I really don't, I forget like your professional life and your, my friendship life with you. Like I just forget like that I'm also a fan of your work. But yeah, we have kids.
I have that with a bunch of people. Like I know them in real life, but they are not the person that I'm obsessed with in the movies.
Right. It's a different
It's a totally different thing. And they're different.
This is so good.
Yeah, that's probably the luckiest I've ever gotten is to be on that show, because I didn't aim to be on it and didn't think I should be on TV and all these stupid things that weren't fitting with my
But you were really
ego, and that was the best thing that ever happened for me.
Every episode ended with a dance party.
A
Braverman dance party, which I think is the secret of good television.
You could be right.
I think if you're not ending it in tears, you have to end it with a dance party.
Well, think how many movies you go see and you're like, how are they going to wrap this up? Like we're getting at that 98-minute mark, and then all of a sudden they cue up the music and they start dancing. You're like, here we go. That feels like the ending.
Yeah. Now you're in a great mood and you leave and you're like, I love that movie.
It's really a good cheat.
Yeah, I just gave away.
I've been in a movie where they added
secret.
A dance sequence at the end to save it.
What movie?
This movie When in Rome that Kristen and I did when we were first dating. And we went and did reshoots and added some big elaborate dance scheme to
That's
the end.
That's so
and
funny. I think, I've never seen that one.
Yeah. I wouldn't imagine you would. It's not really in your...
Have you ever been in a car accident that you caused?
Or no.
Has that somebody
I've
else...
I've been in some terrible car accidents that I was a passenger in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a motorcycle accident?
Yes, I've been. I've been hit twice in LA. Mind you, I've lived here for 25 years, and I was a motorcycle messenger the first year I lived here. So I rode all day long.
Right.
But I was hit then.
What hit you?
Oh, I was driving down Broadway in Santa Monica. It used to be three lanes all one way, and I was in like the right lane, and there's a woman in the middle lane that saw a parking spot open.
Oh.
And literally just like took a hard right turn and slammed on her brakes all in one moment to get into that spot, and it just hit me.
And what was the damage?
I came off the motorcycle and I hit with my body the parking meter. And I didn't think anything happened then other than I stood up and I was wearing pants, but then they had become short. So I saw like I was bleeding, but I didn't think anything was all that messed up. I also didn't have insurance. And so I got my motorcycle home. I got in the shower. And then when I got in the shower, presumably shock was wearing off. All of a sudden I was like, oh, my ribs really hurt and my arm really hurts. And then I went to the emergency room. Yeah, and I broke some ribs in my arm and I had real bad road rash.
You broke your arm?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Jinx. So you were in a couple of other motorcycle accidents where you got hit.
Mm-hmm. I've been hit twice. I've not like just thrown a bike away like at the track or anything.
Right. Wait, what do you mean thrown it away?
Oh, well, most people that ride at the track are going to crash the bike occasionally. Or if you even watch professional motorcycle racing, I'm obsessed with MotoGP. The top riders, they're crashing once every four races. It's just the kind of nature of it.
Okay, so like you said you're obsessed with what?
Motorcycle. Oh, MotoGP.
What channel is that on?
So, unfortunately, we used to be on DirecTV on me. I don't know what it was. Bean Sports, and they've now got rid of it, and now I have to use an app to watch it. It's really big in Europe and not big here.
So, where's the motorcycle track here?
So, I mostly go to a track called Buttonwillow. That's like 100 miles north of here. Uh-huh. I also go to Laguna Seca a lot, which is a very famous track, and that's up in what's that area? Monterey. It's in Monterey.
And you just go around in a big circle.
Well, no. I think Buttonwillow's is maybe 19 turns left and right. And then I think Laguna Seca is 12 or turn 11 is the last turn. Yeah. Anyways.
Have you ever been scared?
Yes. This thing can happen if you don't have a good steering stabilizer, which keeps your bars from jiggling. I was once on the straightaway at Buttonwillow, and this thing happens, which can happen, called tank slappers, where I'm on the straightaway, I'm shifting into fourth gear, so I'm going like 140, and
oh my
with
God.
Zero
That's like faster
warning.
Than the speed of light. That's so fast. What the fuck?
Well, like big track, Willow Springs, you go 185. On that straightaway.
So, okay.
About a 140, the fucking bars just start going bang, 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 bang. Like left, right, all the way. Full stop. And like my friend DeCastro's behind me and it's putting down like rubber hash marks on the thing. And most of the time you're coming off because the bike is just completely out of control. There's really no way to recover that. And by some magic bolt of luck, it corrected, but it corrected right when I ran out of straightaway. So turn one to the right. And now I'm no longer in tank slappers, but I'm going straight out into the desert going like 100 now. It's probably slowed down. And so I go from, oh my God, I'm dead, to, oh, they stopped, to, oh fuck, I'm off-roading now on the street bike and I'm going to crash now. And then somehow I slowed down and got control of everything and I never went down. But that was probably the most hair-raising experience on the motorcycle.
Okay, so like, is there, this might sound like a stupid question, but mind you, I don't know anything about motorcycles.
I implore
cars.
Anyone who's super bored right now to just YouTube tank slappers. It's the gnarliest thing to witness on a motorcycle.
Is there any way to safely, if, let's say you're in a situation where you're like, I'm coming out of this bike. I'm going through the air.
Uh-huh.
To like safely.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things you're hoping to do, which doesn't mean that you will. Now, right. Let me just say this. 90% of all motorcycle accidents on a racetrack are called low siding. So you're leaning to the right in a right-hand turn, and then just the front wheel slips out. But you're only 6 inches off the ground, and you're not getting hurt. You're just going to slide. You're going kind of fast, but you're in leathers, and you're going to slide, and that's going to be that. You want to slide. You don't want to start rolling because if you start rolling, that's when you get broken bones. Mm. So you're trying not to slide. You're trying to stay flat and just ride that out. But again, that's your game plan. I'm sure in the moment that goes out the window. But the guys that are professional that crash a lot, they for the most part just slide. And then the worst kind of accident you can have is the opposite. So you're leaning to the right. You're in the turn, and then the back wheel slides out, which then all of a sudden catches and it flings you in the air onto the opposite side.
Whoa.
And that's where people break stuff. But low sliding, generally, you're not going to get.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
hurt.
What do you like better, motorcycles or cars?
Wow. Boy, that's really hard. I'm a better driver than I am a motorcycle rider.
What outfits do you like better for motorcycling or cars?
Oh, the motorcycle outfit's top notch. You're like, you're like road warrior. You're full leathers, you know, head to toe, full one piece leather suit.
Oh my God.
You feel like you're in road warrior. The car racing suit, which I have, is a flame retardant suit. So it's not cool looking. It's,
right, it's just like
flame
a jumpsuit.
Retardant. Yes. It kind of looks like pajamas.
Right. It's like
pajamas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which do you prefer visually? The motorcycle look is a cool look, right?
Yeah. I mean, that visually, that's a cooler look for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say that I think the sound of a motorcycle driving by is really annoying.
You hate it. Yeah, of course. And I get it. And I understand if, because we can lane split here in California, which means you legally can share a lane if you're on a motorcycle with a car. So you can pass a car in that lane. And I can see where that probably scares people a lot, because if you're on the highway for more than 10 minutes, you're going to get passed by a few motorcycles and you're not paying attention. Some people switch lanes. So I get it. Mm-hmm. The loud thing, although annoying, is how we stay alive. So you're never going to see me coming, but I hope you can hear me coming.
Totally. Yeah.
So that's what I don't understand. Like the electric.
That's why I don't care for the Prius.
Yeah.
Because.
So just step out right out in front of
you. We need to hear these cars.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm driving and my windows are up and my AC is on and I'm pulling out of my garage, I don't necessarily know if somebody's behind me. Mm-hmm. But they can hear me, so don't give me a dirty look,
right,
walkers on the sidewalk, because you can hear me and I can't necessarily see you. But with a Prius, it's silent but deadly.
SPD.
Yeah.
I have the same thing because I pull out of my gate onto a very busy street and there's a ton of pedestrians that walk along there. And so often I get a look from somebody that is like...
Look.
They're so shocked, and I'm like, LA. I'm riding a fucking Ducati with Termi exhaust. There is no way you didn't hear me start it in my garage, then ride up the driveway, then heard a gate opening. How are you this shocked about this?
Like, you see what I have to deal with. You see how I have to back out of this, like, really kind of scary situation where there's a lot of cars coming at me and people, and I can't see.
Yeah.
No, what's the
And
look
I get
for?
Indignant. I'm like, you're walking through my driveway.
Yeah.
I'm not in your yard.
Yeah.
I think I have the right of way here.
I totally agree. And it is really, it's really in LA, like.
Well, it's a pedestrian city. It's so different from Detroit and New York, which is in New York. Yeah, go ahead and cross the street whenever you want. But you're responsible to get your ass across the street before that car comes.
Right.
And I prefer that arrangement.
Yeah.
Like, don't give me a jaywalking ticket. I can decide if I can get through.
Totally.
But also, I got to get through. It's on me to get through.
Yes.
L.A., they almost, as like a sport, people see a car coming at 50 and go, I'm going to step into the crosswalk right at the last minute to make them.
To prove my point.
Yes.
That we're walking.
And pedestrians
and
have the right of way.
And we're walking at a leisurely pace. And you can wait. And it's
no
like,
hurry.
Okay. There's not like a traffic problem in the city.
Yeah.
That's not a thing. Like, whatever. Anyway.
So many opportunities to work our program.
Now,
as we walk around, drive around the streets of LA.
What's that famous? I remember you told me that you went to the Autobahn. Is that what it's called?
I did go to the Autobahn, but really, I think the story you're thinking of is Kristen and I went to the Nürburgring, which is
no speed limit.
Yes, it's a 17-mile-long racetrack in Germany that at one time and still sometimes is a public road. So on Sundays, it is open to the public to just go race. Any knucklehead can buy a pass, and you can go on this. And the cool thing about it is you can't really learn the track unless you're German. You're not going to remember 14 miles of left and right turns.
Right.
So you're pretty much just driving down a country road as fast as you can, hoping you judge correctly. And the highlight of the experience was, mind you, Kristen's in the passenger seat like reading a magazine while this is all going on. We did four laps. We were there for maybe like an hour and a half. But at one point, we're on this straightaway, and we're in a 911 I rented from Avis rental car and promised them I was not going to the Nürburgring, even though I asked them to put it in the nav.
What's a 911?
It's a Porsche. It's like the sporty Porsche.
Okay.
And it was a stick shift. And so we're on the back straightaway and we are flat out in this car. It probably goes 185. And I just kind of see in my rearview mirror, oh, someone's coming very fast. Like we're going 180, 185 and some car's approaching briskly. And so I go, honey, look at this. I turn to my left and watch, and two guys drive by in a Aston Martin DB9, and they're in full fire suits, helmets, Hans devices, everything. They look like they're in a professional race. They're going at least 215. I mean, they fly by us.
Oh, my God.
And they're them flying by us on the left brought my look back around to the right, where I now see there are two guys in a sprinter van going about 80 miles an hour. So you got guys in a sprinter van going 80 miles an hour. You got us going 185, and you have these two guys in a full-blown race car going 215. And I was like, what a country. Yeah. Look at what they're trusting people to do.
Scary. People must die all the time.
I can't imagine they die too often or it wouldn't still be open. They say the Autobahn's much safer than our highways.
So wait, what is the fastest car?
In the world?
Yeah.
I think the Bugatti, whatever replaced the Veyron, like the Bugatti some fancy
name. That's like such a boring question. Like, I don't even know what that is, what it looks
like. But the fastest car now goes like 260 miles
an
hour.
That's so
bonkers.
Fast. Like, don't you throw up while you're driving? Like,
I don't think
it's too much.
I think it all depends on, like, in this, if you shoot a lot of action, you learn this quickly, which is if you don't have something in the foreground giving you that sense of speed, it'll look so slow. Like, the very famous Hollywood story was, what's his buns? He was crazy, created T.W. Hughes, Howard Hughes. So Howard Hughes decided to direct a movie and he shot all these airplanes, like these World War II airplanes, dogfighting and stuff, right? And he watched the footage and he was like, this looks so slow and crappy. And then they had to go back out and just wait for clouds. They needed clouds to show you that the planes were going fast.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't feel that fast.
So I guess it all depends where you're going 260. If you're going on the Bonneville Salt Flats, it probably doesn't feel that fast because nothing's approaching. But if you're doing it on a wooded road.
When you drove me to pick up my car from the lot, it did feel very fast because I guess we were weaving in and out of traffic. And so it's like fast, slow down, turn, go fast. So that was very thrilling.
Yeah. It's a thrill.
Yeah. So are you a thrill seeker in general? Do you like roller coasters?
I used to love them and now they make me sick. As I've brought my kids to these places, I'm realizing I can't really do it now. But I know what this is all about at this point.
What is? What do you mean?
No dad, wanting a stamp of manhood and male approval and just looking to my group as a kid as like, what are the hallmarks of being masculine? So you fight. You're dangerous. You drink a lot. You do drugs. And I'm sure that was specific to my circle, but I was just like, you tell me the things and I will do them. Ride a wheelie on a motorcycle? Great. I'll do that if that means I'm a man. And so now I recognize it was all just kind of approval seeking. But the ironic thing is I just enjoy it now.
Well, of course. Like, there's many things that are masculine, marks of masculinity that you're not as into because you happen to like cars and motorcycles.
Right.
So
what are some, have you seen the mask
you
live in?
Woodworking.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Building shit. Mm-hmm. Volunteering fireman.
Volunteer fireman. Yeah. That's a very,
that's so
conventionally,
hardcore. I was just
masculine.
Because the fires that are happening right now, which are terrifying and awful. And I was just watching the firemen on the news this morning and I'm like, that is so fucking ballsy, dude. Like, to fight fire.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because the fire's not going to quit. It's not like the fire's doesn't have a...
It's like the most noble... Like, I know it's like, yeah, firemen are the real... Firefighters are the real heroes. But, like, they literally are.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's so scary. Fires are very scary to me.
They scare you.
Or you can, like... I don't know. You could BMX. Like, there's many things.
I did
you
do
could
that.
Do.
I skateboarded. I snowboarded. Right. Alternative
or
strategies.
Like sports. Like you're not a real. You're not a hardcore sports nut.
No.
And that's a super masculine thing.
You're right. You're right. But my circle, for whatever reasons, didn't give a shit about that. But I want to ask, have you seen the documentary, The Mask You Live In?
No.
You must watch
it. Okay, I'll watch it tonight.
It is tremendous. The backstory is I interviewed Amy Schumer. I got into this thing with her at the end, which was regrettable on my end. And then by her apology, regrettable on her end, which was, we were talking about how afraid women are moving through the world and how afraid they are of men. And I said, I totally agree. I said, but do you know, we're also very afraid of men. Men are very afraid of men.
Yeah.
And she, rightly so in that moment, was like, yeah, that's not what we're talking about. And it got kind of contentious. And then I left and I said, well, look, I was assaulted by a man. I've been beat up by, I've been physically abused by men. Like, I get being afraid of men, whatever. I left and I was like, God, I did something wrong there. What was it? And I'm like talking it out with Monica. And it occurred to me what I had done was basically the All Lives Matter thing, where people saying all lives matter in response to Black Lives Matter is true. All lives do matter. Mm-hmm. But we already know white lives matter. That's why we have to specifically say Black Lives Matter. So
right.
I realized what I was doing was kind of an All Lives Matter thing, which is like, yeah, you're afraid of men, but so are we.
Right, right, right.
So I regretted that. And I apologized to her over text. And she said, oh, my God, thanks for saying that. And I also realized, like, I was really diminishing the fact you got molested. And I didn't mean to do that. And I'm sorry. Uh-huh. And I said, okay, well, yeah. I'm going to talk about this. She said, please talk about my side of it. This all That's led cool. to then her emailing me, you got to watch this documentary, The Mask You Live In, which we did. And it's all about masculinity and how we teach boys to be masculine. And
yeah,
of the many things, the one I want to get to is just simply the definitions are make money, fuck a lot, drink a ton, and fight. And like they list this thing and Kristen just kind of turns and looks at me and is like, you are such a cliche. And I'm like, I am. Like, I knew about that list and I went out and started checking right. them off. And it's embarrassing. Like, I was like, yeah, okay, that's the list.
You said, let me work my way through it. Make money.
Make money. Fuck a lot.
Uh-huh.
Be
drink a lot. And fight.
Drink a lot and fight.
Well, God, I can check all those things off as well.
Right.
But
isn't it?
I didn't realize it was a masculinity thing. I thought it was
a winner thing.
I guess I thought it was this is how I will, if I make money, that's how I'll feel important. If I fuck a lot and drink a lot, I guess that'll make me feel entertained, loved,
desired, approved mm-hmm. of.
And if I fight a lot, then I'm standing up for myself, which nobody else is going to do, defending myself mm-hmm. and not afraid. So bravery. So, I mean, but
so
are
well
all those
I
things
you,
masculine things? Like, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But as well as I know you, I don't know. So what I've come to realize about myself was, and I interviewed Dog the Bounty Hunter, and I mm-hmm. really was bonding with him over this.
Mm-hmm.
I was sending the loudest message to anyone that would listen. I got tattoos. I tried to get strong. I was sending a message to everyone. Don't fucking hurt me. Don't try to hurt me. I will
yeah.
fight back.
Yeah.
And I know where that comes from in me. But as well as I know you, I don't know why you have the same message you wanted to send to everybody. Don't
because
hurt me.
Because hurt people hurt people.
Right. But were you? Did you have trauma in your childhood?
Of course.
It's not really in Dear Diary.
Well, really?
I mean, of course you did. I didn't mean like
Look,
surprise.
There's also,
just...
it's, I mean, did I have trauma in my childhood? Absolutely. Did I write about it in Dear Diary? Sure. Did I write about it to the extent? No, because I've also had trauma outside of childhood in mm-hmm. young adult and adulthood. And I'm also constantly learning more about the kind of trauma that I went through. Like, I was 27 when I wrote Double D.
Uh-huh.
I'm 40 now.
Yeah.
Like, I'd like to think I'm a bit wiser.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, like, have been through more years of therapy and being like, wow, you know, there are different ways we are abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And different ways trauma catches up to us once we realize the behaviors that worked for us no longer do.
Mm-hmm.
And
They're hard to shake.
Drinking
though,
and drugging was one thing, but anger, not as easy.
Mm-hmm.
And has bitten me in the ass and continues to.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it
Who's
is.
Who's the recipient of the anger usually?
Usually Crystal, my partner.
Okay.
Crystal, so like if you're coworkers. Listening, I love you. and I do love her.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it was one of the reasons why Judd didn't like working with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would get really angry. I would get really angry with the writers in the room. I would get really angry with him. And I would be a dick and like,
not to be psych 101 about it, but do you feel like as a kid you were not listened to unless you got crazy angry?
I was not allowed to get crazy angry when I was a kid.
Okay.
Because if I did, then I would get
shamed,
hit.
Okay, sure.
Anyway, would you say, is therapy one of your hobbies? It kind of is.
Well, in the non-formal sense, yeah. I don't go to therapy, but yes, I like nothing more than talking about why people think they do, why they do what they right. do, or why I think I do right. what I do. But I am wondering the feeling of fuck it, let's burn the house down, being a pleasurable feeling. I wonder if you and I share having had absurdly arrogant, entitled expectations of myself.
I'm sure.
And it being very daunting to have such, like, you know, totally unrealistic in
well, visions of grandeur.
Visions of grandeur.
Of course.
And in the weight of the visions of grandeur, like, that me going, fuck it, I'm going to do this thing that I know will make me disappear for 3 days is going to be a break from that and evaluating where am I at in this process? I'm supposed to have done this and I need to do that. And like that can get cumbersome and very uncomfortable. Can it?
Rewind for me for a second. In this visions of grandeur, you're saying we beat ourselves up because we think we're supposed to be somewhere where we're not.
Yeah, like from 8 years old, for some reason, I think I should be interviewed by Letterman. I have no idea why. I don't even at that time even think about being an actor or a comedian. I just feel like I need to talk to that guy, David Letterman, who I worship, and I need to figure out how to have him talk to me to have enough worth and value that that guy would want to talk to me. And so I got to figure out what my plan is to be right. that important in America. And so for a while I was going to be a writer and that's all I was going to be. And I was going to be a novelist and I was going to be Bukowski and that was grand and fucking romantic. But that also came with, you better write a lot. And then so I was always beating myself up that I wasn't taking the steps that were going to result in me being anointed the most important person in America. And I just was very hard on myself at all times for not either being productive or advancing mm-hmm. in this social status. And the times where I would check out, and I know nothing can be done once I have a drink. Like once I have a drink, I have a singular priority of staying fucked up.
But hold that thought for a second, because I would say that I do agree with feeling that way. However, part of the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is because I have found through doing something that I love without any agenda,
mm-hmm.
without this is going to make me really important,
yeah.
has freed me from that compare and despair and vision of grandeur,
yeah.
where there's nothing, when I do something that isn't furthering my career in any way, it's just for the pure joy. When you're riding your motorcycle, when you're mm-hmm. riding a car fast, it is just for the joy it brings you in your heart. It has yeah. nothing to do with anything. You've
it's intrinsically, you know, motivated it, and not
you've written about it, you've acted, you know, but regardless of that, only because that's such a part of your personality, it's something that really brings you joy, and you don't care if you're the best driver, otherwise you'd be a driver professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd
well,
be like a race
that,
car driver.
Delusion of grandeur as well, but yeah.
Well, but you're still doing something where you know you're not going to be the best in the world.
Oh, no.
And you're okay with that.
No,
and
no
like, how cool is that? You know?
Yes. And I will say I have to say going on like 2.5, 3 years, I have zero aspirations as far as where I'm going, what I'll be applauded for, what's going to happen. I really, for 2 years, feel like I've been free of that.
Because you felt, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, which you certainly will, I know, but like, I can say from my experience, I had been blessed with a certain kind of humility of failure that really lifted this thing off of me that was like, I care about what other people think and I care about what I look like to other people. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel good at the time and it was not pretty, you know, but like, I feel the same way and I don't want to do anything that I don't like doing. And if that means that, you know, I have to move because I'm not making the most money, then like, okay. Uh-huh. Like all I want is to enjoy what I do every day.
Well, I think we have the same goal as quote artists. I hate calling myself that. But my goal is to love process and not care about results. Totally. I mean, that's the total goal is to learn to love process.
I couldn't agree more. And that is like, it's a really hard thing. But with this project, well, one with this podcast, but also I think I learned that through my extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. Like I love painting. I know I'm never going to be the world's top artist, painter, but I discover so much in the process of doing it. And I've gotten so much better at certain things. And I'm always surprised that I don't care about the painting when it's done. I give them away, you know,
okay,
they
sit, one.
I'll give you one. They sit downstairs, but I love the process of doing it. And like, I really latched onto that and have tried to explore that. And like with this last TV show I did, I loved doing it. I have no idea if it's going to be good.
Right.
It does not matter. It's in God's hands. Like I don't know. I know that I don't lose any sleep at night over it. Uh-huh. I don't have great expectations. I'm not like waiting for an Emmy. I was just talking to Lena about this. Like I've only won one trophy in my whole life. I know we have to wrap up. And that was from her show at the Writers Guild Awards. But like, I'm not like a trophy person.
Right.
I never really have been. I'm not really good at competition.
Uh-huh.
And I don't feel like I'm competitive with anybody. Like I don't have competition.
Yeah.
There's no one who I compete with.
Right.
Cause.
Well, which is true.
Yeah.
But we think of it as a zero sum game all the time. The one thing I was going to say that the things that shifted for me that. A few things. One, kids for certain.
Yeah.
Like having my identity anchored into something that's actually an identity, like being their father is something that is true bedrock. Like if that's not what America thinks of me, that's not what strangers think of me. That's not how many people bought tickets to something.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a real thing, a real job. I have a real role in two people's lives and I have to, do it to the best of my ability till I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I now, that is front and center in my identity, which has been so helpful in right-sizing every other thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, just the reality of the world is I'm not going to be in a superhero movie. That ship sailed. Like you get to a certain age too, where it's like, for me, my acting goals
agree with that, by the way. Like I don't know if that ship has sailed for you, but if that makes you feel more right-sized and believing that, then that's okay for you. But like I can see that, like I wouldn't put it past anybody. Like
sure, let's just say I felt compelled to be trying the hardest to whatever the top of the thing was, and I'm now 44 and I go, I'm in the NBA. I'm not Michael Jordan, but I play on a team in the NBA and that's plenty.
Yeah.
And I'm not, my days of maybe getting to be Jordan have passed me in many ways. I mean, who knows? Maybe I'll have some great thing, but I say it in a very positive way, which is just like, oh, that whole race has just fizzled in my head. I'm less aware of who's doing what. I really don't know who the big stars are so much. I don't know who's up and coming. I don't, you know, I'm largely unaware of it. It's just because I know I'm not competing anymore. Like,
right.
You know.
Doesn't it feel so much better?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. It allows you to actually enjoy the fucking crazy gift to be in the NBA.
Totally.
What an insane
right.
gift
there
to
isn't,
be.
Like what really more like, I don't know, like. I remember Dan saying, and I don't know if he's Dan Harmon. I don't know if he said this on the podcast and or when we were working together, but he was like, I'm like one Tesla away from happiness. Like, I'm good. And I was like, yeah, I don't even need a Tesla. Like, I barely know what they are.
Yeah.
So do you have that?
A Tesla?
Yeah.
No, we just got rid of Kristen's.
What kind of cars do you have before I ask you my last question? Okay.
I have a 1967 Lincoln Continental
uh-huh.
with a 590 big block in it. It's very fast.
Okay.
Coilover suspension, big
disc
brakes.
You've had that for a while.
I've had that car for 24 years.
Yeah, yeah. I know that car.
I have a 94 Buick Roadmaster station wagon, wood grain,
uh-huh.
which also has a supercharged V8 in it and brake suspension.
It's kind of a cool,
it's
like a
very
hipster.
Sexy. You would
I
shit yourself.
Saying that word.
You'd
I think
shit
I haven't
yourself.
Seen it.
It's shocking to me you haven't, but I'm just going to show it to you because it's really worth. But at any rate, and then I have a pickup truck that I tow my dune buggies and sand car around with.
Oh, yeah, I like those.
And then I have a Chrysler Pacifica minivan because they're a sponsor, and I fucking love it. So mostly I drive my Chrysler minivan around.
Are those all at your house, or do you have like a special garage?
They're all at my house or at the house we're building.
You guys have been building that for a long time.
Oh, forever. And
but
probably,
it's still going to be very close, correct?
Here's another great thing. That
right, Dax? You're still going to be close to me?
Oh, even you're closer.
Great.
I got even closer.
Great.
But can I tell you that this is how another way AA has saved my life?
Yeah.
Is they teach us that expectations are resentments waiting to happen.
Ooh,
and,
I like that.
And I have not allowed myself to I have never asked them when the house is going to be done. And because of that, I've never been frustrated that it's taking a long
right?
time. Because
yeah.
I never like built this whole story in my head about when we're going to be in there and how it's going to feel and all that shit. So I'm like, who
I'm
knows?
I'm going to miss that house.
Okay, here we go.
Let me see. And then I'm, yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, what a fucking
also,
beaut.
Also, all of your girls are wearing the same outfit,
denim.
Which are denim jumpsuits. This is a beautiful picture that maybe you'll
I've
let
posted.
Me...
Yeah, so okay. I can give it to you.
Okay, my last question for you is like, what hobby, like what's your fantasy hobby? And like hobby isn't a great word for what I describe filling the void to be, but
I have it
for lack. What is it?
I drive around the country in a 45-foot motorhome.
No, this is already part of your hobby.
I don't have this yet. And okay, I work a lot, so I'm not doing this.
Okay, okay.
I have a 45-foot motorhome, and I'm towing a 28-foot stacker trailer. And inside, I have my dune buggy and one of my favorite cars. And I just take the girls around, and then we unload the shit and drive it around. And then we go to the next state because
okay,
I have perpetual
so
wanderlust.
Okay, that I love that travel.
Okay,
but, okay, is there anything that, like... Like, I can see you doing that one day.
Yes, it's
is there
happen.
Anything that you wish you could be into, but you're just not like, you know, there's like, I always, my example is like, I wish I could be into cooking or like,
oh,
I wish
uh-huh.
I had more of a green thumb, but
uh-huh.
I don't really give a shit about either.
Right. Nor do I. We have that in common.
Yeah. So like, is there anything you're like, or like.
Yeah, there's a couple things where it's like I'm witnessing the results in other people and it seems pretty inarguable that it's not a beneficial thing, but I just can't care about it.
Like what?
Well, there's a couple of them. One that bothers me morally a lot is like the environment. I'm not nearly as consumed with my
right.
fear of the environment as everyone around me. And I'm not denying the science. It's
no,
not
I hear
that.
You.
I just am like, I can't even let myself start worrying about that because
yeah.
I'll kill myself. And I could be doing much more and I'm not. And I had a guy on who's, I think, convinced me last week that I need to, and I think I'm going to make a list and at least improve this year.
Right.
And another thing's yoga. Like I see people get out of yoga and I'm like, they got it, man. They are fucking, they look like they're on Xanax.
Totally.
Naturally.
Both of those are really good. I totally feel that way about both of them and yoga as well. Like I wish I was just really passionate about
oh,
like
yeah.
stretching.
Yeah. Cause you know, you'd feel so good all
yeah.
the time Or posture. Kristen's always working on her posture, like, diligently.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, I bet she feels so much better because of it. Look at you. You got your shoulders back.
Yeah, Amanda's and just like.
Yeah.
Amanda's like.
And you and
gorgeous.
I are like fucking no, pouring
like
out of this.
The hunchback of
couch.
Notre Dame. Like, you know, Amanda's like just a vision of like joy and beauty. Is she not? Like,
she is. She's really is angelic. Her smile's a $1 trillion smile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does sports. She does it all.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you look at some person's style and go like, fuck, I need that style.
Like clothing?
Yeah, like a whole look, you know? Oh, here's a great example. Uh-huh. I imagine if I was a woman, I would look at Jemima. I would look at Jemima's Instagram and be like, why can't I just exist like this? Like, it looks like she's perpetually living on a 70s album cover.
Totally.
In all the best ways.
Well, on one, I don't feel that way because I do.
Well,
I gave a bad
example. You know her.
No, but even if I did,
she's a real person.
Let's say, like, you know, Beyonce.
Yeah, okay, Beyonce. Queen Bee.
Right. I mean, I'm willing to believe that these people who look like they have these amazing lives, I'm pretty sure that they aren't as good as they look.
Well,
because everybody has, we're all doing the same shit. We all have the same insecurities and anxieties. There's nothing Beyonce.
We all watch a 60-inch TV. Even poor people now have 60-inch TVs. So it's like we're all just sitting on the couch watching fucking TV shows.
We're watching
That's our
the
life.
Same shit.
Yeah.
There's nothing Beyonce knows that I don't. She works a lot harder than I do.
Yeah.
And the results, the proof is in the pudding.
Do you know what when I see Beyonce, who I love, fucking love, I think she's one of the most powerful performers ever.
Yeah,
she sang 1+1 on American Idol. I almost died.
Perfect.
With that said, when I look at her life, I immediately think, ooh, it takes a lot of people to run that life. And I don't want to be around a lot of people running my life. That's
right.
My immediate thought is like, that takes a lot of people. And I don't want a lot of people around.
There's nothing anybody has that we couldn't get. If we wanted it badly enough, we would get it.
Right.
If we wanted to be Beyonce, we could get, I mean, we could have, I don't have that kind of ambition. I don't have that kind of energy.
We don't have the skill set either.
No, and yeah. I didn't ever want to have that skill set when I was growing up. I didn't want to have a voice. I just wanted to be in chorus at school. I didn't want to have the best voice.
Uh-huh.
I didn't give a shit. I didn't want to be a singer.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to be a professional dancer.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to be Madonna. I'm sure there are a lot of girls who do, and they don't make it to Beyonce. But like, never say never. I mean, like, I don't know.
Well,
again,
we've learned the hard way that you can cram as much shit in the God-shaped hole or whatever you want to call it. I don't believe in God, but I do believe I have a hole that is really only filled with esteemable acts and not acquiring shit. So I've learned the hard way, you know, that that stuff just doesn't have any lasting impact. Well, you just said, I walked in, I was telling you about my Jordans that I've gotten into buying Jordans.
You were
and I'm like they
made
me feel great for 2 hours.
Right, and then
I had
for
to buy
me,
another pair.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, it is like my biggest problem now. It's like, I love this t-shirt. I need another one.
Uh-huh.
I don't. I have it.
Yeah.
But I want another one because I want that feeling. I'm like constantly chasing the high of buying shit.
Uh-huh.
And it isn't a hobby. It isn't. I'm not talking about it on this podcast because I'm not filling the void.
Right.
Like, I'm creating a bigger hole.
More wanting.
But yeah, I mean,
that's
I
had
love
to
the
unfollow.
Way Jemima's look, Ugh. Life looks on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
it looks so authentic. That's the thing we're all drawn to.
And she is
right?
really
yeah.
fucking cool and gorgeous and has a really cool life and like has really good
I
taste.
Met her once and I really liked her.
She's awesome. She'd be a great person for you to have on your podcast.
I would love to.
She's also like, you know, she doesn't know anything we don't.
Mm-hmm. No, right, right.
Like,
I'm saying if I were a woman, I could imagine. Because I certainly for years was like, oh man, if I woke up and I was Brad Pitt, I have to imagine I would feel complete and wonderful. But yeah. I don't believe that anymore. But I certainly did for a long time.
I mean, same. But also, like, well, I look a certain way. I can, you know, there's no amount of plastic surgery that's going to make me look like Beyonce, because I can't think of other people right now, or Jemima or whoever. Like, and I'm like, all right, well, I don't know, like.
Might as well get busy liking what you are. Yeah, like. Because it has to get done at some point. You're just kind of putting it off, right?
Yeah, like I can compare and despair, mm-hmm. or I can just accept like who I am and be like, well, if I wanted to wear high heels every day, I could, but it's fucking uncomfortable. I don't want to. I want to wear Jordans. And if it makes me look dumpy, like whatever, I'm married.
Right. Yeah. Take it up with Paul.
Yeah, and he doesn't
care. I would be remiss if I didn't just vocally say in public how much I love Paul. And I went to your wedding. It was my favorite wedding I've ever been to. I think it's one of the only weddings I really, really enjoyed.
I have pictures of you guys dancing, and I'm so glad that you came, and I always have fun when I hang out with you. And anyway, thanks again for listening to this podcast. And it's called Filling the Void, and we do have a call-in number. And
oh, my God, it's called Filling the Void.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed that I brought up. That sounded like I really was setting you up.
A lot of people don't remember that it's called that.
Right, and I just was talking about filling the God-shaped hole. But it's perfect. Yeah, but it feels set up now in retrospect.
But we're talking about it, and the listeners will know that
they'll be able to differentiate between. Well, I love you.
I love you so much. Thank you for doing this.
Of course. I'll do it anytime you need.
Never miss an episode of Filling the Void. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Rate, review, and tell a friend. It really helps us keep this going. Filling the Void is an Erios production with editing by Veronica Gruba and original music by Michael Cassidy. Erios.
Powered by Acast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.